Today's program is brought to you by Whole Foods Market, a dynamic leader in the quality food business, a mission-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com.
I'm Erin Fairbanks, host of The Farm Report. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Episode 146 of The Morning After. We're back! Woo! I'm Jesse Kiefer.
I'm Sari Kamen.
Sari and I have been on hiatus for the summer. We had a summer vacation.
Missed you, bro.
I missed you so much.
Missed you so much.
But here we are. We're back in studio at Roberta's, and it's such a pleasure to be here.
Roberta's is totally different, by the way.
Not at all.
The back bar is cash only.
Oh, okay. That change is going to be a little tough.
That's tough.
But it's going to probably prevent me from walking out on my tab so often.
Or buying 14 beers.
Yes, exactly. Oh, I only have enough cash for this, guys.
For seven.
Sorry. So on today's show, Chef Gerardo Gonzalez of El Rey Coffee Bar and Luncheonette on the Lower East Side. We'll talk to him a little bit later.
That is the best place.
Yeah. Welcome in studio.
Thank you for having me.
We're so excited.
We can't wait to hear.
I'm excited to be here.
Yeah.
So Sari, you had kind of a crazy dinner last night. You were telling me about that.
Oh, yeah. I went to the Nomad, which is obviously one of like the best restaurants, like Michelin starred sister restaurant of 11 Madison Park. So it was my first time there. I was very excited. And I got sent a couple free things, and it made me feel like maybe they had Googled me before, like they knew that I was in the food industry or something. But they sent these eggs that had this like custardy thing. They're like, oh, it has like everything bagel spices and like smoked fish. And then I told Jesse this, and then Jesse was like,
they juggled you.
They juggled me.
They knew that you were like this Jew food lady. And so they sent you like good girl.
They were like, here's your bagel and your lox, but it's in an egg because we're very fancy.
Yeah, we're very different.
They said it just like this.
Well, I think that you totally deserve to be juggled.
Thank you. I want to thank the Nomad for their juggle and, you know, Lashana Tovai, you guys.
Well, you know what I've been missing the most about not doing this show with you, aside from the several beers in the middle of the day, is that I haven't been hearing all the bizarre food news that you bring to my attention. And let's do some of that. So Sari not sorry came in.
Hashtag
has some food news for us. And Gerardo, please like interject. Let us know what you think.
If you're
about
angry,
these things,
don't hold back. All right. Well, first up, always our favorite place to talk about Tokyo. There is a new cafe. It's not about fast food.
Is it cats? Is it dogs?
It's actually not. It's even weirder than that. There's a new cafe in Tokyo that has bikini-clad waitresses that pretend to be your wife. This is the weirdest thing I've ever heard. It's a bizarre service to a single men and women. There's bikini clad men and women that both work there. People come in, they know your name ahead of time, or they remember your name from last time you were there, and the place is called My Wife. It's called Oreno, but that means my wife. And the customers, they call ahead of time, they give their name, like when they're coming, and they can actually see, like, look at the website and pick who they want to like pretend to be their wife. And the advertisement says, in Japanese, obviously, as soon as you know what time you'll be home, let me know, dear. I'll get dinner ready. they can browse the waitresses online, and they can learn things like their birthdays and their measurements and their favorite foods and even what kind of beds they prefer to sleep on.
Beds.
Yeah.
I mean, that kind of sounds like prostitutes.
A little.
they're just making dinner. It's just innocent. Totally pure, innocent fun.
But what is innocent and fun about your wife making dinner? Like, aren't you going to hear all the complaining and all that
stuff? Well, that's the beauty of it. It's like if they start complaining, you can leave. All right. Okay, next up. This is really good. A drunk woman was so determined to get a Whataburger, she drove an SUV without a wheel to the restaurant. Of course, this happened in Texas. Mm-hmm. She wanted Whataburger so bad, which is a popular burger chain, apparently. She drove there in an SUV that did not have one of its front tires. She got to the restaurant. She was drunk, shockingly. And then police pulled her over for driving a vehicle without a tire. and they found an open 25-ounce container of Bud Light inside of her car. She refused to take a breathalyzer, and they quickly obtained a warrant for a blood sample, and she was sent to the hospital, where she was considered super combative. She was arrested and charged with driving while drunk, but Girl just wanted a Whataburger.
Did she get her burger?
Yeah, I was like, did she eat?
What at about least, that burger?
No.
What about that
was
Whataburger?
Was it worth it?
I'm just amazed that she actually got there and then left. That's a feat all on its own.
On the way there or afterwards?
I think she was arrested on the way there.
All right.
Okay. I thought she got there.
Had her burger.
And then left and got arrested, because then she'd be my hero.
Unfortunately, no. I mean, but I can relate. Like, if you're drunk and you're like, I need to eat, like, you will go there.
You'll go the distance.
You will go the extra mile without a tire on your car, like, whatever needs to happen. And you know what?
Good on her for,
like, going to get a burger and not more alcohol. Well, I think
no, she already had it with her. She had her road soda with her.
But she wasn't going to get more. I mean, she wasn't like, I'm driving to the liquor store. She's like, I need to eat something. And I respect that. And I think it's a great message for the children.
I really want to know, actually, how far it would have been for her to walk. Because I think people in the rest of the country, they don't think about that. They're like, oh, I got to go to the Whataburger.
That's what's amazing about living in New York. It's like, you can go to the Whataburger without having to drive, no matter how drunk you are.
Oh, that's...
Uber.
Yeah, Uber.
Uber it.
Yes, that's the lesson that we learned.
Uber it equals four tires. Uber equals Whataburger. Yes.
Uber is always the answer.
Equals no criminal
jail.
Record.
Yeah, yes. And this is just like a little happy news for people who are interested in investing in the next iPhone, which is the iPhone 9. We've all been waiting for a long time now. Apparently,
iPhone 9?
Are we already?
I thought it was 6S.
Well, what's iOS 9? Is that that's just the operating system?
Maybe. I don't know.
I don't know technology. But the next set of emojis to come around includes the taco.
Great.
Yay. And a burrito. And a bottle with a popping cork.
Okay.
Right. Also a cheese wedge, a hot dog, and popcorn.
Wasn't there already a taco, though?
I think
no.
It was in the works.
It had just been long... been spoken about, because in January Taco Bell actually started a change.org change.org petition to bring the taco emoji to life. It collected 25,000 signatures, and you know what, some good was done in the world. Change.org was finally influential. iPhone listened, and now we're gonna get what we need in the world, which is a taco emoji. And I'm very happy about it.
There you go.
There. And that's what I got.
Do you think one day people are gonna just like order food online via text via emoji?
Is that not already? I mean, I think I do that. I just like text my Seamless app with like an
it's
emoji.
It's like crying baby, taco, burrito.
Thumbs up,
yeah.
And then steaming poop.
Yeah, I just text the restaurant with like four sushi emojis. And a cocktail.
That's how many you want.
It's weird that it's never showed up, though.
It will one day. The future is here, Sari. The future is here.
Taste it.
So we're going to take a break here on The Morning After. We're going to come back with Gerardo Gonzalez of El Rey on the Lower East Side.
Born from discord and harmonies, raised by the rays of the falling sun. He's half the killer of the mighty python. So a typical to Tripoli. Ignites the heart and turns the other tail. His animals, the gods of glory, is so much less than mine. Animals, the gods of glory, is so much less than mine. One ribbon binds an upper hair. Dresses fall back. Shoulders and low to have anything to do with men. Love fierce to follow Sorrento's. And so a typical to Tripoli ignites the heart and turns the other tail. As animals, the god to glory is so much less than violent. Animals, the god to glory is so much less than
Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Are you a locavore? Our Northeast regional forager for Whole Foods Market sure is. She spends her time traveling around the New York City metro area sourcing the best new or interesting artisanal and handcrafted local products for our purchasing teams at the local store level. Part of our commitment to our local suppliers includes assisting them with the process of getting their products sold at our stores. Whether it's suggesting packaging designs, pricing, or distribution methods, she's helping some of the area's best new products reach savvy shoppers at Whole Foods Market stores. Today, New York. Tomorrow, the world. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com.
And we're back here on The Morning After. I'm Jesse Kiefer.
I am Sari Kamen.
A luncheonette, by definition, is a small, informal restaurant serving, well, lunch. A vintage term, somewhere that I imagine my grandparents may have dined, but El Rey's Coffee Bar and Luncheonette on the Lower East Side has revived the term, ushering in what I think is the era of the modern lunch counter. Welcome to The Morning After, Chef Gerardo Gonzalez.
Thank you for having me.
So when I say modern luncheonette, I'm not thinking of the past. I think of like tuna salad and an egg cream, but I guess I'll take from the Times Review. Pete Wells was talking about it being, you know, just the food that you want to eat, what you feel like eating.
I think that's what a good translation. I mean, honestly, I'm not sure if people can make the connections, but for sure, when I was coming up with inspiration behind El Rey, my favorite restaurant in New York City is B&H on 2nd Avenue, and I definitely got some...
Oh, did you Google it?
I Googled it, and I went over there, and it was, like, the best experience as far as, like, a good mix of, like, old New York and young kids, and it just... It reminded me as if there was, like, a show on PBS called, like, Diversity Cafe, where it was just, like, a cast of characters that are working behind the counter that are coming through the door. And the main thing that I liked is, I mean, their food is great there because they make their own challah. Thankfully, they just reopened after being down for a couple months after a horrible explosion. Mm-hmm. And but it was mainly just like a sense that you got where it was like super casual. You could have really great food at a good price point and in an environment that was just like very pleasant to be in. So given the space that I had in a 350-square-foot coffee shop. The only real area I could carve out for a kitchen was about 3 feet wide by, like, I don't know, 2 feet. So, naturally, I was like, lunch counter.
Yes.
Is what. And it was the ultimate in experience in... it's not just, like, an open kitchen. It's, like, so interactive. And it's great. And you get to know your clientele, like, super quick. But I guess, I mean, as far as food goes, yeah, the approach has always been just like something that was like very, it seemed very easy and fresh and like simple. So it, in my mind, it's like this throwback to like old New York, but injecting like California flavors. It's like this weird, I don't know, biodome of California.
Yeah. I mean, I what do you mean by California accents?
Well, just like just that kind of feel like you're at the beach, or as far as the food goes, like it's like very Southern California, very like this type of Mexican food that I grew up with that was very coastal. So it was always like very simple food, not like Tex-Mex or kind of like what I feel is represented in most Mexican restaurants, which is like heavy and like super saucy. I just appreciated more that proximity to Tijuana, Baja, Rosarito, and then also the hippie, like new age culty restaurants of like Los Angeles, like The Source.
And, but you guys also have a lot of like Mediterranean and
yeah.
Middle Eastern
yeah,
flavors and spices.
That's actually... It all stems from, long story short, I used to live in Berlin for a minute when I was younger, and I wasn't into, like, food at that time. I was very more into, like, maybe studying, like, I don't know, when you're a freshman in college, you're like, I'm going to be a cultural anthropologist, which is like, what does that mean?
Yeah, but, I was like, I'm going to be a broadcast journalist.
Yeah, right? Okay.
I was like, I'm going to be a stoner.
You succeeded, and you...
Yeah, you can succeed at that too.
I didn't
there.
Say that.
You can. But so at the time, living in Berlin, I fell in love with the Turkish food, the Turkish street food, because there's a huge Turkish population in Berlin. Döner falafel is like the national street food over there. And two things that struck me very interesting was, one, the similarities between the Turkish culture in Germany as the Mexican culture in the United States, because my parents are both from Mexico. And then also the similarities in just the food itself, like the very bright, brightly colored, brightly flavored, some spice. There's like a balance of like every type of flavor profile in the falafel and the kebab that reminded me so much of Mexican street food. So what it sparked my interest back then was kind of tracing food through like its lineage and tracing the food of Mexico to Spain and Spain to the Middle East by way of
the Moors
conquering Spain. And just like, there are very Mexican things that you can look at that are actually have their origins in the Middle East, such as horchata is originated in the Middle East. Also, another thing that I just getting more into the culinary world, like you find all these spices that you never grew up with and you're like, oh, this stuff is amazing. And there was this one particular spice I grew up with in Mexico called tajin, and it is essentially just citric acid and chili powder and salt and like sugar. And it's like, I love Mexican food. Mexican products sometimes is though like the most chemically like involved stuff. So I look towards Middle Eastern spices just to get that same exact flavor by just blending like our house blend at El Rey. That's pretty much on everything. It's just a blend of sumac, Aleppo, and then either regular salt or smoked salt. But it has the same, it hits the same exact notes of like sweetness, spicy, acid, salty in one like
I think that sumac is
spice.
Like the most underrated.
Oh, sumac's amazing.
Ever.
Yeah. Just like using that citric, that quality, and the way that it plays with Aleppo is really nice too, because Aleppo has heat, but it also has like a fruity sweetness to it that not too many chili flakes have. So, I mean, that's what I thought was interesting, just like using Middle Eastern flavors and combining it with in a Mexican kind of.
Yeah. I just want to touch on something you said originally about like use the way that this space is used. Something that I think is so kind of distinctive about the way El Rey, like just the architecture and like sort of the organic way things have happened there, is it extends onto the street.
Yeah.
And that's for, like, Jesse, you were in Paris recently and like, you know, London, and like that's something you see a lot in Europe, but I don't think you see very much in the United States. Is like, it just, it's like there's a culture surrounding El Rey that kind of extends itself naturally.
I love it, but also when I approach sometimes, I'm like, oh my God, there's so many people. Like, the store is literally bursting out at the seams.
Yeah.
We even made a bench next door in front of the smoke shop and Frankie's, which is a very nice clothing store a couple doors down from us. Just as a joke, we just said that was like our new private dining room.
Well, I mean, because in New York, you would have to get all the like, you know, the licensing
for sidewalk,
to have a sidewalk seating and all of that. I mean, I also noticed that throughout the summer, you had the windows open.
Yeah, the whole time. And that's, it's kind of interesting because like the vibe of the place, like I said, is very like California, beachy and stuff like that. And it's interesting because like come November, those windows close and they don't reopen till like April, May sometimes.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting, it poses another interesting challenge as far as like this space was essentially a retrofit of a retrofit of a retrofit. It's like every time we add something else, it presents a new challenge. And honestly, the initial part of it, my approach was that with limitations, it just forces you to be more creative and maybe a little bit more streamlined. And you're thinking of how to get the most flavor and how to have the most impact in something that doesn't have to be so fussed over. The other thing too that kind of went hand in hand with that is prior to that, I was working at this restaurant called Goat Town that has since closed in the East Village. And we would start to, over the years, get more and more people with dietary restrictions. And I made it a very conscious decision at one point to use those restrictions as creative like platforms as opposed to just like, forget it. Like, no, like, I'm not going to make these Brits.
No substitution.
Like, no substitution. Yeah. I think the only time I've ever been like, I'm not doing that is like, I just don't really like making egg white scrambles. That's like my only, wall that I'll put up. But even then I'm like, I'll work on something with that. But I guess what I'm saying is like that taught me to kind of look at more alternative
Can you give any examples
of
that?
Well, for instance, like, okay, so going to the grits, like there was a customer that was loved grits. She loved the whole pickup of it. It was like a smoked pork and like all that kind of stuff. But she just was lactose intolerant. So one day I just made it with I made cashew cheese and I made cashew milk. And then I just made it with that. So like soaked it in water. Once it got up to a certain point, then added a nut milk to it, and then I finished it with a nut cheese, and it was like extremely creamy, extremely rich. It had a great flavor because it was primarily just cashews and grits, which played really well together, the corn and the cashew flavor. And then it let me present a dish where I could do it either 100% vegan or I could do it
like it's vegan except the pork.
Yeah, well, you know what I mean. Yeah, I could do like I could omit the pork, but I guess the point is like creating food that is really tasty, but afterwards you could be like, that was vegan.
Yeah,
like, you don't have to say it at first and people eat it. I'm like, hey, guess what, you just ate something vegan. And then, gotcha. Then they're like, gotcha. And they're like, no way, kind of thing. Just in that kind of sense where, like, if you initially say, there's been times where I'm like, this is vegan, and somebody will be like, roll their eyes and be like, oh, God. And then they eat it. They're like, okay, that was good. Whereas, like, I could just not say it, and then they eat it, and they're just like, oh, that was good food. It's like, it doesn't have a label whatsoever to it.
Do you guys feel like you are kind of pigeonholed as a healthy restaurant? And is that a detriment to you or is that actually benefited?
No, I don't. You know, I wouldn't say I'm conflicted at all. I'm not. But there is a part of me where, you know, at a certain point, I just kind of look at it from a business point of view. And not just like to say that. I think it's more so like if people are going to associate us with kale salad or our version of avocado toast, like I would just use those as our like Trojan horse to kind of get people to try other things. And I think in that sense, there's nothing different than that. I think if you compare it to like a restaurant's like burger is just a vehicle to get people in the doors. I feel like sometimes, or it's just like that easy thing that people like it supports the rest of the menu in the sense that like, a lot of people are going to order burgers or a lot of people are going to order kale salad. And if that means that you can make enough sales so that you can do other more interesting things that other people will enjoy, then I don't really have anything against that. I think the dinner menu, the approach for that was completely different. Whereas like the luncheonette counter, the inspiration was like B&H taken over by hippies. The dinner counter was... I used to joke around. We went to Bar Jamon as the inspiration. So I would say it was Bar Jamon in hell.
Which is Bar Jamon is a great tapas spot in like kind of Flatiron.
Yeah, like Gramercy kind of area by Mario Patali.
Perfect, pure, like fantastic little Spanish tapas.
Yeah,
but
I don't know what Bar Jamon in hell is though. Explain that.
All right, Bar Jamon in Tijuana. How about that?
Okay,
but I'm not equating
with a bunch of hell expat with Tijuana. Hippies.
No, but I'm just saying like with a bunch of expat hippies that are maybe a little lost, but they're like, all right, this looks kind of familiar, so I'll stay here. But I met Bar Jamon in Tijuana because it was using interesting elements that kind of. It was just food that I thought was more interesting. And
if that's hell, I'm not mad at it.
Yeah, right? Like, no, I don't mean that in a bad way. I'm like, you're blazing. You're going for it. You're like, we're in
it's
this.
It's on fire.
We're in this together.
And fuego.
Something that Sari and I noticed about, you know, in researching, you know, El Rey and then the other Nick Morgenstern spots, the Morgenstern's Finest Ice Cream and Gigi's, the website's open with products that is not a food menu. It's mm-hmm. like a towel
Yeah.
Or, you know, Gerardo was really nice and brought us some mermaid, like, fish scale
sparkly blue
tote bags from El Rey.
Super shiny.
What is the, what is the relation between those products? I guess I'm going to call it not fashion necessarily, but.
Well, there's certainly, like, an aesthetic.
It's an aesthetic. So
that transcends the food at El Rey and, like, the other restaurants in the company.
Well, okay, so the towel came up because we did a pop-up in the Rockaways, and I was like, we got to do a beach towel, and it's got to be a photorealistic image of one of our most popular dishes, which is the avocado del sur, because it's just kind of jarring when you first see it. You're like, what the hell is that? It's kind of gross, but that's kind of funny. And my thought was like, the world is your toast, kind of like the world is your avocado toast. And then from that, we're like, oh, naturally, you would make one for Gigi's, the grandma pie, which is pretty iconic for that brand. And then the salted caramel ice cream for Morgan Stern's. And I think with my approach is that with dealing with like the restaurant industry is one thing that I like about New York that not too many other cities fully comprehend, maybe San Francisco and the Bay Area and stuff like that. But it's not just about the food here. It's about the experience that you're trying to provide for your guests. And that's through hospitality. That's through the story you're trying to tell. But I feel like right now in New York, there's kind of a really awesome time in restaurants where each is the expression of the individual person behind it or the collective group behind it. So it's like, it's not just about the food, but it's about the way that they direct you through that menu. And I think it just felt like for a while in New York, it was kind of cookie cutter with all the restaurants and like very homogenous and like everyone pretty much had the same menu of like, it was just like the worst of, I don't know, farm to table was just like replicated over and over.
Well,
and over
again. I mean, I was actually going to ask, because when you're talking about like the avocado toast and the kale, I mean, if those are like your sort of Trojan horses of the menu, that sort of implies like you guys will always have them maybe. But like there does seem to be a point, or there maybe not so much right like today, but there was a point where it just felt like kale salad was so
everywhere.
Oversaturated.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting.
And then what do you do? It's like, then do you get rid of your kale salad because you don't want to be like everyone else? Even maybe you did
well,
it first.
Honestly, I feel as though kale salad was already a thing before we even did it, as far as like, people are already like, kale salad.
Yeah.
Like, then you got to make the best kale salad.
Then you got to make the best kale salad you can make. And I feel that we make a pretty good kale salad that people seem to enjoy. So I have no qualm with that. And, you know, like, I've never heard anybody be like, another kale salad. But only because they like the kale salad.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's...
And you guys do enough other things that I think it makes it
okay. I think
okay.
It's very... You know, especially, like, the one thing that I would have issue with sometimes, and I wouldn't say it was issue, but since, you know, we started off as a coffee shop, we were compared initially to other coffee shops that had just, like, avocado toast or, like, just very, like, I don't know, basic menus?
Mm-hmm.
Basic and... Yeah. Just, like, so... I've just always strived to, like, do interesting things with whatever we wanted. And it's really just, like, a collaboration and talking to everybody that's on staff and being, like, excited about stuff and then, like, doing things that are, like, tongue-in-cheek, like the vegan chicharrones locos and being, like, throw some nutritional yeast on that, like, just because it's...
My favorite food.
...kind of funny. Mm-hmm. But it ends up being a very good dish. Like, you don't have to sacrifice having a sense of humor for, like, actually doing something that's not very good kind of thing. But I guess to go back to the original thing with the products and the merchandise and the whole experience that restaurants can provide, it's just like, I feel like that's more exciting and interesting when it's almost looking at exactly like fashion, like not just specifically that, but the aesthetic. And it's like, you're becoming a part of something and you can take that with you.
It builds a fan base. It builds a culture. And I think that where we are right now, Roberto's has been amazing at doing that.
Yeah.
And like the Tarlo group,
it's a brand.
Diner, Marlon Sons, it's a brand.
And there's nothing wrong with that as long as it's a good
brand. And people are
going
to continue to support those spaces.
Yeah.
So I want to know, as we move into the fall and winter season, how does El Rey take its California vibe and translate it into the winter? Because I've definitely worked with chefs from California, like straight out of California. And they're like, what? I can't put corn on a menu?
Yeah. In
December?
January?
No. Sorry. What happens?
Jesse's telling you right now.
It doesn't work that way. Well, okay. So, for instance, one of my favorite dishes that we had that has changed throughout the season, it started out in the wintertime, and it was like a heavily roasted kapocha squash with Greek yogurt, granola, coconut flakes, and whatever seasonal fruit you have too, with honey. And throughout the year, or throughout the seasons, like, it changed. Like, currently it is, I think, on beets, like lemon roasted beets. And it's just, that's just a good example of like playing around with vegetables in a way that's not just like savory. And you can do that with how you would normally use a fruit. Another good example that I love is I like soups a lot, and I like making sauces and soups, and that's the easiest thing to do for winter. But I would make like hibiscus borscht in the wintertime.
That sounds crazy.
Yeah, it's so good. It's so good. It's like completely vegan too, and I make cashew crema, like a cashew, horseradish cashew crema that kind of like mixes well with it, and
that sounds so good.
It's really good though. But it's like, and again, that's like, I love that play on like, I guess what you'd consider Jew food, that you can interject some California
in New York. It's just food.
Thanks. Just food, yes.
So I read this article, and it had the author of the article had you and Nick, your business partner, Nick Morgenstern, interview or describe, like, if you were an ice cream flavor, what ice cream flavor you would be. Uh-huh. And yours was like a hibiscus something sorbet.
Oh, yeah. When was that? I think, I don't know, because there's definitely like some elements to my food that
I guess I was wondering, like, if you were a dish, what would the dish be
that we currently do, or that the thing that I love about Tijuana and Mexican food that I grew up with is that it's proximity to San Diego. There's just like food that like crosses the border so many times that the end result is the craziest thing that you could ever think of. So a lot of my favorite stuff just happens to be that kind of weird stuff that has elements of like, exactly, just like, it's very sweet, it's very salty, it's very spicy, it's very sour, and it's very savory all in one kind of thing. And it's just, I don't know, I love that kind of flavor profile.
Yeah. Well, Gerardo, thank you so much for coming on The Morning After. El Rey Coffee Bar and Luncheonette is at 100 Stanton Street. Their Instagram is El Rey NYC. So seriously, check them out if you haven't already. And I'm sure if you're listening to this, you've already
R-E-Y.
Checked them out.
R-E-Y. Not R-E-Y. Yes. I made that mistake.
R-E-Y, yes. Yeah. El Rey.
El Rey.
Yeah, like the king.
The king.
Speaking of the king, we're going to come back with the Morning After quiz.
From your jealous chest and I bow my head to you, 'cause kicking myself would be a waste of booze, and you won't allow that can be. I know it will get easier over time. Take off the even though I am across the ocean, looking out at a sunflower view. Ooh. Remember that time I came all the way out to Hoboken to prove my devotion to you. I know it will get easier over time. Ba-da-bum, ba-ya-ba-bum, ba-ya-ba-bum.
and we're back here on The Morning After. We've been talking to Gerardo Gonzalez from El Rey on the Lower East Side. So it is time for The Morning After quiz. There are three multiple choice questions.
All right.
Get them all right. You win the quiz. I'll buy you a Budweiser.
Nice.
or whatever you want.
Really. If I get it wrong, do I buy
you? If you get it wrong, no, then you just have to...
We get a lifetime supply of El Rey.
Yeah.
Got it.
There we go. Of avocado toasts. Perfect. Deal. All right. So, Gerardo, you run the restaurant El Rey on the Lower East Side, but what do you know about El Rey de Rock and Roll, Elvis the King Presley? Question one. Elvis Aaron Presley was born January 8, 1935 in Tupelo, Mississippi. What was unique about his birth? Is it A, he was born 1 month premature? Is it B, he was born a twinless twin? Is it C, he was a record-breaking 13-pound baby?
Oh, man.
Don't look at me, buddy.
Well, since Immaculate Conception isn't one of the options on that one.
I should have thought about that. Damn it.
I would say he was born a twinless twin.
Correct. He was born a twinless twin.
Nice.
Which, I mean, I...
Was the sibling stillborn, or...
I wasn't given any detail on Wikipedia. However, something happened to that twin, so he obviously had a longing for
something,
life.
Right?
Yeah,
he wasn't. Exactly. It wasn't like a parasitic twin.
I don't know. I kind of hope so.
All right, but that it was, or that it wasn't.
That it was, okay. And that's what like made him so
his
famous.
Inspiration, yeah.
His inspiration.
I'm gonna Google that real quick.
Yeah. He asked the parasitic twin, you know, "Hunka Hunka Burning Love." Is that a good title?
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. All right, question two. Impersonating Elvis dates back to the 1950s, right after he hit the scene, and remains a popular act today. Which of these is not the name of an Elvis impersonator? Is it A, Elvis Herselvis? Is it B, Elvez, the Mexican Elvis? Or is it C, the Elviserator?
All right, let me see. I know for a fact... Elvez B is a true impersonator because I am Mexican. And
because you and are that. That
because
Mexican.
I am Elvez.
That's Elvis.
let's see. So the first one was...
Elvis Herselvis.
Okay.
Elvez the Mexican Elvis. And then the Elviserator.
Oh, man. I hope this is a real one, but I'm going to go with A as the not real one.
As Elvis Herselvis?
Yeah.
Actually, it was C, the Elviserator. That's what I made up.
Okay.
Elvis Herselvis is a lesbian Elvis impersonator. Well,
that's why I was hoping
was
it was
Elvis
true.
Herselvis.
Yeah, I was hoping it was true. So I win.
Yeah. I win. Somehow.
I win on that.
All right. Question three. What is the origin of the famous phrase, Elvis has left the building? Is it A, it was a line from his 1957 film, Jailhouse Rock? Is it B, it was a headline of the Memphis Daily News the day that Elvis died? Or is it C, it was used by a concert promoter to encourage frantic fans to leave the music venue after a show?
I'm going to say C.
Exactly. Yeah. C. It was like Elvis has left the building, motherfuckers.
Yeah, go.
Leave. Get out of here.
Find him.
Well, Jordan, you did a really great job.
Nice job.
Thank you. I mean, I grew up with a little Elvis.
Yeah?
I think my dad's favorite song... if I can recall, was Suspicious Minds. I'm not sure what that
says. I mean, that's many people's favorite song, Suspicious Minds.
I don't remember it. How does it go?
It's kind of a later one.
Yeah, it's
a duet with a lady.
I just wanted Gerard to sing it.
We can't go on together.
Oh my God, I'm pregnant.
With Suspicious Minds.
Suspicious Minds. Okay, that was really good.
Oh, thanks. Thank you.
I like the fall season.
Wow.
High tech. Well, thank you again, Chef Gerardo.
Thank you
on.
For having me.
This was great. I want to thank you all for tuning in to the first episode of the fall season of The Morning After. It's off with a bang and it's going to kick ass. Make sure to follow us on Twitter. We are TMA on HRN. And on Instagram, we are The Morning After on Heritage Radio. We also have a Facebook, The Morning After on Heritage Radio. And I want to thank Liz Smith. She was our engineer today. Today's break music was provided by Odetta Hartman. The theme song to the show was provided by Jonathan Crowley, and today's sponsor is Whole Foods Brooklyn. And thank you, listener, for tuning in. If you liked what you heard, tell your friends to subscribe to the show on iTunes, and feel free to get in touch with us at heritageradionetwork.org. Coming up next is a short clip of Roberta's Radio, live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. EST.
See you next week, Sari.
See you, Jess.
Cool. This is a question, which is, would you go out with this person again? You're on a date. They pick the place.
Listen to a dating horror story on episode 25 of Roberta's Radio.
You go. You're having drinks. You have a couple rounds of drinks. They're like, do you want to order food? You say yes. You order food. You get a bunch of stuff, right? A bunch of small plates.
It's going well.
The other person says, oh, hey, we should get this and we should get this. And do you like this? And then let's get one of these because that's what I like.
Yeah. And you're like, I'm agreeable. Sure. Yeah, let's do this, right?
You're trying to be a nice person.
It's a first date. You want to be charming.
Indeed.
Charming.
That's like charming in a Cruella de Vil kind of way.
Yeah, it's like a Disney, like, evil character.
I think this is foreshadowing. Yes. Carry
on.
So
this is going well, I think.
So it's going well, and it's going well. And then we get the bill, and he's like, do you mind if we split this? So I was like, okay, yeah, sure. I'm happy to split the bill.
I think that's fair. Right?
Like, that's fine.
Yeah.
It's $120. So it's
can't put a dollar amount on
was
a person.
Was he nuts? Was he like being like, oh, let's get this?
Yes, he was. So I'm
See,
like,
that's kind of bull fucking shit
Johnny, you lost the game again. Someone you should not know, Johnny Culotti.
If he's like saying, let's order the menu. I don't know.
Yeah, if it's all his idea.
So I go, okay, great. Well, I split the bill, fine. Whatever.
It's
it's whatever.
You're
it's 20, it's 2015. Who cares, right? Yeah. Fine. Would I have ordered all that food if I was going to split the bill? Maybe not.
I would order more drinks.
Yeah.
Whenever you're drunk and you're on a date.
Yeah.
So it's time to celebrate.
So, then I look over, we're leaving, and I look and I see that he didn't tip on his half of the bill.
Oh.
That's rough.
I hope he's listening to that.
I hope he's listening.
He knows who he is.
I mean, are you in the service industry, right? Like, you can't do that.
That's a deal breaker.
Wait, so then did you feel bad and take, like, do the whole tip on your side there?
I didn't see this until I had already tipped.
So
I had tipped and signed, and they took mine, and then he was signing his, and he left his face up, and we were, like, putting our coats on.
He paid on cards.
He left his face up. Clear that he did not tip.
That is egregious. There is a special place just like 40 miles down the road from Chef's Valhalla reserved for people like that.
You never know what you might hear on Roberta's Radio. Listen to all episodes on heritageradionetwork.org and on iTunes.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.